Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. I want you to take a moment to think about what haunts you. Is it a past relationship? A loved one you miss? Memories of times when you've made mistakes? I know that all of the above follow me around daily, popping up at the most inopportune times, making my stomach drop, and throwing me off my balance. There's a woman who runs a hotel on the banks of Flagstaff Lake in Maine, who believes that there's one particular spirit keeping her from moving on. Producer and student of the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies, Sophia Saldana, slept over at the hotel in hopes to find this ghost.
It's 4:27 in the morning. I'm in a room at the White Wolf Inn. And I'm waiting for the captain. I'm not sure if he's going to show up, but I would like him to, because, well, first of all, let me tell you why I'm here. Let's go back to this morning.
I'm in Stratton, Maine, in a wooden house with a huge balcony. There's a restaurant on the ground floor. Sandy bought this place 22 years ago. I'm just spending the weekend. And apparently, there's a very special guest in the house.
I don't see him physically. I know when he's there and when he's not there. I mean, I can tell that something's different. You know, like there's an energy shift.
Weird things used to happen in the restaurant.
The waitresses would be cleaning the back dining room and shut the dining room down, and we'd be going out the door about half an hour later and there'd be a light on. And it wasn't just once or twice, it would happen periodically.
At the beginning, Sandy thought her employees were tricking her. But then, she was told the story of the captain.
So I got this lady who is a shaman, and she came and did a clearing. And then when she was all done, she said she's finished. And one of the things she did say was that there were a couple of spirits here that were good spirits, and she let them stay because they didn't want to leave.
The captain is a ghost. I'm not sure if I do believe in ghosts, but I can't stop thinking about it. I start romanticizing this man that spent his life in the sea. And then he didn't want to be in the sea anymore and ended up here. I guess if I was a sea captain, I would choose to live in a distant port of a bright city. Sandy believes that we don't choose. We're not in charge of our own destiny. She also didn't choose to be here.
I married someone because I thought that that's what I should do out of college, because that's what my family wanted. Because a woman can't be by herself and cannot provide for herself. You've heard these stories, right? So my husband turned out to be a homosexual. I tried to make this whole thing work. It took me 7 years. So I end up getting involved with a person, another man who I married, and moved up here, and we bought this place. He leaves me for a woman that was working here. And I'm the one with the debt, and I'm the one that has to run the place by myself. Now, everything falls in line that I can do this. And literally, at that point, things started working again for me in my life.
When is the moment you realize that things start working for you? Is there someone looking out for you after all? Why am I here anyway? Am I meant to be telling this story? If the captain is here now, he certainly has the answer to my questions.
I hear and understand he's a very friendly spirit.
This is Tom. He's a dowser. Tom uses weird instruments to communicate with spirits. Maybe he can help me.
Let me get out my pendulum. Is it all right for me to douse for these things? Okay. Show me my yes. Thank you. Can you show me no? Is this captain in the building? No. Is he in the area? Right now I'm getting a no. He's not in the area. Maybe he doesn't want to be interviewed.
Tom said that there is something else we can do. We can leave a recorder in the room and wait for the captain to say something on tape.
EVP, electro voice phenomena.
And that's what we did.
Captain, would you like to be interviewed? Would you want to come in? All right. I'm getting a yes.
We waited outside, and at the end, all we got was this. Sandy also doesn't hear the captain's voice, but she can feel his presence. Did she feel it when she was still married? Or all this started when she was left alone? He's now a reason for her to stay.
I mean, I've had, you know, I get lost people coming in here. I get, you know, kids that are turned back at the border because they don't have their passports, you know, and they have no place to go. And so the border guards stick them on a log truck and send them back to me. I mean, come on. Why? This is too weird. This is not a normal place. This is not what normally happens.
Are you happy?
Yeah. I mean, it's at some point, I just accepted that this is what I'm supposed to do and this is why I'm here. And when my job's done or whatever, then I'll be able to move on or go do something else. But everything has moved around to make it so that I could be here and prosper and take care of my needs. And in the process, I seem to be taking care of the needs of a lot of others, whether on a physical plane or a non-physical plane.
That's what I discovered today. I'll be gone in the morning and maybe I won't see the captain. But if I could, I would ask him if he's the owner of his own destiny. Did he choose to be in this small town in Maine? Or is there any spirit looking out for him? Captain, what happens when you die? For Salt Radio, I'm Sofia Saldanha.
Listen to decades of stories produced by the students at the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies at saltstoryarchive.com. You're tuned to The Spot, KALW's weekly showcase of the best stories made by indie radio and podcast producers. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. So where do you stand? Do you think that the captain exists as a literal spirit haunting the halls of the White Wolf Inn? Are there ghosts trying to contact us however they can, trying to affect what we decide to do with our lives? Unfictional, the podcast and radio show from KCRW, tells the story of one night when a group of skeptics, just like myself and my friends, came together to party, but soon had more on their hands than they could believe.
A long time ago, in my native country of France, my best friends would sometimes leave for a year or two at a time and go to foreign countries. And that particular year, in the beginning of the 80s, they came back with mystical knowledge, having been exposed to mysticism and spirituality. And they had brought that back to our posh Parisian suburban neighborhood. And we were all around 12, 13, 14, and We started the habit of doing seances. Our Wednesday afternoons, when we were free from school, were spent gathering around the table and calling on spirits. There was no toy store in France where you would find a Ouija board. So we would line up Scrabble letters and cut up a piece of paper that would say yes and one that would say no, and basically improvise a Ouija board. We would turn a glass upside down, we'd put our fingers on top of the glass, and then you concentrate real hard. And you close your eyes and nothing is said. And then you start to feel a little tug and a little pull. You can feel a little bit of a movement, of an energy that is completely independent. So the glass moves across the table, makes a noise, and goes to a letter, then another. It takes a while. It's like time kind of suspends itself. And lo and behold, the glass started spelling out words, and we'd get messages, and sometimes they were silly, sometimes they were threatening. Sometimes we would ask, you know, when is the end of the world going to come? What are the winning numbers of the Lotto? Something which we never got, by the way. And that became sort of our primary hobby for a while, calling on spirits. Fast forward to the beginning of the 90s, and my friend Christy is having her birthday party.
It was a combination birthday party and going away party, being thrown by my girlfriend Jennifer for me. Was at her house in L.A. I was actually leaving L.A. and going to finish going to college in Arizona. I just didn't want to be in L.A. anymore.
The only two people I know there are her and our friend Deborah.
Christy and I have been good friends since high school. She has been one of my best friends for years. The party was in an old craftsman's house in Hollywood. Just so you know, I have a very bad memory and I don't remember very much, but I do remember very clearly a lot of this event.
The party was a hodgepodge of various individuals.
My girlfriend Becky was one of my roommates. Becky's boyfriend, Mike, he was a Malibu sheriff. Then there was Mark, the Frenchman, and my girlfriend Debbie. Then my boyfriend Danny, and he was the rocker.
The party really wasn't going anywhere. In France, when we had a party, the idea was drink as much as you can, as fast as you can, and then put on James Brown's Sex Machine. Unfortunately, there was no James Brown available that night, so we had to think of something else. And I started to wander off into the dining area, and there was a huge oak table. And in the back, there was an armoire and a bunch of crystal glasses. And an idea popped in my head, and I thought, hey, there's nothing else going on here tonight. Why don't we do a seance?
I've never really taken these Ouija boards seriously. I kind of thought, whatever, we'll do it. I think in high school, maybe we tried it a couple times, but nothing really ever happened. So I didn't take it seriously and didn't really think anything of it.
It kind of just struck a chord that it would be something fun and different to do. I mean, I'm a spiritualist, like I believe in God, but I don't believe in Ouija boards. I just thought it would be fun to just mess around. I wasn't taking it seriously. I didn't believe in that type of thing at all. So we lit some candles and turned on some, you know, Enya, and just kind of played around.
We cut out a bunch of letters, you know, to create the alphabet, put them around the table in a circle. There was a piece of paper that said yes and a piece of paper that said no. And we took a crystal glass with a stem and turned it upside down and put it in the middle. You know, everybody quieted down and closed their eyes. And I don't know if we are the antennas. I believe we are. And I believe that the glass ultimately is just a vessel, and it allows psychic energy to concentrate at the center of it. for those of us who had their fingers on the glass, and I think at the time it was Christy, Deborah, me, and someone else, we started to feel, after a very short amount of time, actually it was uncanny how quickly it started. We started to feel that very familiar little tug.
It was a little bit thrilling, like, ooh, what is this? I remember my hair kind of raising up, thinking, what could this be?
You have the sensation that something is connecting with the glass and then trying to find its bearings. It's very distinctive. If you've done this a few times, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
And then after a while, it started kind of getting a flow and a rhythm, and it started kind of moving in an eight, like a shape of an eight, and back and forth, and it was very rhythmic, but it was flowing and very smooth suddenly.
Of course, the skeptics immediately thought, you're moving the glass. And I would say, no, I'm not moving the glass. And a good way to take care of the skeptics is to command the glass to do geometric forms. For example, I would tell the glass to spin in a circle. You tell the glass to go faster and faster and faster. And let me tell you, that thing flies. It's so fast. And you would still have people going, oh, yeah, you're moving the glass. And I would say, no, you try. Every time the glass would tip over. You cannot coordinate four people that don't know each other, have not rehearsed this, and get a glass to move this fast. It's impossible. At that point, everybody went, huh, what's going on? One of the guests at the party was an ex-stripper whose boyfriend was part of Malibu's law enforcement, and he said, no way, I don't believe this. You know, here, how old is my girlfriend? And the glass spelled out 29. Everybody went, well, see, that's not true. We all know she's 26. See, I told you, this is bull. Yeah, it was bull, except for the girl in question, who admitted at that very moment that, in fact, she had been lying about her age by 3 years all this time and was indeed 29. Now that it was clear that something was moving the glass other than ourselves, one of us asked, who's here?
And started going back and forth to the letter K-I-K-I, or K-E-K-E, I can't remember how it spelled it.
And everybody asked, who's Kiki? And Christy, who was at the head of the table in front of me, just froze. I hadn't ever seen her like that. And she looked down at the table and she said, I know who's here.
I knew it was Brian. Brian had been my boyfriend for about 2.5 years, and he passed after committing suicide. When we were playing with this Ouija board, I was very skeptical. And even if you were to ask me today, I would still be a cynic. But the questions that we were asking were pretty, you know, standard and no big deal. I mean, anybody could answer the questions that we were asking. But the one thing that did stick out of my mind was it spelled out K-E-K-E, which is Kiki, which was my nickname that Brian called me just in private. That threw me for a huge loop. That is something that I don't understand to this day. Brian was my first love. I used to think about him every day. I still have not been able to look at pictures of him, but I can still see his face in my head. He was very good looking, had an amazing smile. He kept a tan better than anybody that I ever have seen. When he would walk into a room, everybody was drawn to him, and he was really funny, and he meant the world to me.
I think she was stunned. I think she was pretty shaken up. And I think she, you know, probably quite emotional about it because of the way things had ended.
Brian tried to commit suicide several times, and they put him in a little hospital. And then Christmas came, and I wasn't there, and I wasn't able to speak to him while he was in the suicide watch hospital. But I did find out that he got a belt and wrapped it around his neck and hung himself. A horrible way to die. And he was supposedly under supervision, and they were watching him, and somebody dropped the ball. I mean, I know that there's another dimension where our spirits go. It's just, I wasn't brought up to believe that that realm could interact with the present. I've just been raised in a very religious family, and so I really wanted to go back to my comfort zone, and that wasn't in my comfort zone. It really freaked me out.
Are you in heaven? The glass answered, no. Are you in hell? And the glass answered, no.
We asked him if he was in a place kind of somewhere in between. He said yes. And then Becky asked how long he was going to be there. And he said 27, which is the age he was when he killed himself.
Brian was a very lonely, sad person. But most people wouldn't realize that when they met him. So he was just going through a lot of things that probably most young men shouldn't have to go through. I find myself, like, sometimes, like, I'll get, like, a little tear in my eye, like when I was talking to you, and then I just wipe it away, and it goes away, it dries away.
Christy went to leave to go to the bathroom, and then it stopped moving. We asked this spirit, where'd you go? Did you go with Christy to the bathroom? And it said, yes. And we asked him, okay, if you were there with her, what color underwear was she wearing? And it spelled out, well, it misspelled it, but it said W-I-T-E, white. And sure enough, she was wearing white knickers.
Now, just behind Christy was another guest at the party who was her current boyfriend.
This kind of like glam rock guy sitting around the table, being really cool, not believing any of it.
I mean, what the hell? The ex is showing up uninvited at the birthday party and is getting all the attention. So he started to say, this is bull. And the glass immediately starts to move without having been asked a question. This is unusual. And spelled you. At which point, Christy's boyfriend replied, you.
And the cursor started spelling out his name, D-A-N-I, and then F-U. And it kept going back and forth, D-A-N-I-F-U. You know, you can fill in the blanks, but Danny got very upset.
Now, what's interesting here is that when you have to say something like, mother, and you're speaking through a crystal glass as a spiritual entity, it takes a long time to spell M-O, etc., etc.
It was almost like sparring back and forth, and Danny was getting really upset, and sounds so silly. The Ouija board was getting really upset, which appears to have been Brian picking a fight, if you will, with Danny, my current boyfriend. It was very disturbing.
This is surreal. These two are having a cockfight in two different dimensions.
Danny was very hot-headed and very upset and ended up walking out.
My poor friend Christy was completely devastated. Meanwhile, the glass repeated several times, I love you, and then I'm sorry.
This is kind of sad. I probably should have felt bad for my current boyfriend and think, you know, Brian, don't say that. you're being a jerk. But I was just so almost frozen, just paralyzed inside my own head, thinking all these thoughts, you know, is this really him? Why did he die? How come nobody could help him? How much I missed him.
I think that because it was her birthday, we didn't really want to continue. So we said goodbye. And I remember my friend Deborah and I drove back to my house and didn't say a word on the way back.
Ever since that night, I have completely believed. I mean, to me, this was the most proof that there is something out there, more than what we can see and what we know. And it's definitely changed the way I see things. And I am the biggest skeptic. I wouldn't believe this story if I weren't there, and I'm sure many people won't believe me, but it happened. And
I think the hardest part when somebody kills themselves is wondering why. And I feel like he just needed to be heard again, you know? I know this sounds crazy, but I believe he was talking to us, me.
I think that what is important is to stay open-minded to what life may throw your way. Because so much of our life is framed by social convention, religion. We're sometimes quick to dismiss something as, nah, that didn't really happen. And I think there's a little danger in that. You know, you can become a ghost yourself. I think the beauty of his story is not that it is a ghost story, is that it's a love story. And that someone was able to reach beyond the divide and tell someone, for the last time, I love you. Even Romeo and Juliet didn't get that.
That story originally aired on KCRW's Unfictional, a half-hour show of real-life stories created by reporters and producers from across the world. Listen to more at kcrw.com or subscribe to the Unfictional podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at kalw.org. Look under the Programs tab. I love listening to your story suggestions, so send me the podcasts that you've been digging lately to thespot@kalw.org. Also, with Election Day just around the corner, the KALW news team has created a podcast feed of their 2-minute election briefs, where they take on measures and propositions for California and the city of San Francisco. You can listen to them all by subscribing to the podcast at kalw.org/subscribe. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Thanks for listening. Tune in next Sunday, same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.